Hi, is that Steve?
Hey, Ken.
Hi, it's Abby from Cinema for All.
Hi, Abby. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks.
Good, thanks.
I've literally just finished hauling 15 life-size Frankenstein bottles into my flat.
This is the Cinema for All podcast.
A celebration of going to the cinema.
With Jack Chell and Abby Standish.
It's Minisode time again. Abby caught up with the director of Being Frank, the Chris Seavey story, Steve Sullivan. Being Frank is about Timperley legend Frank Sidebottom and the man behind the papier-mâché head, Chris Seavey.
That's right, it was so great to chat with Steve, hear about why he made the film, kind of what drew him to Frank Sidebottom and also Chris Seavey. The film's out on the 29th of March. You can go to beingfrank.film to find your nearest screening at a cinema near you, and I totally recommend it because this is a really, really uplifting and interesting documentary.
Yeah, and a really personal one as well. They were friends, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right. So he'd worked with Chris Seavey / Frank Sidebottom before on a project many years before he came to make the film about him. And it's a very affectionate story, but also gives you a lot of insights that are very personal to him as well, which is just such a lovely thing to see.
Awesome. Right, let's get into it.
Let's get into it.
Well, first of all, I saw the film quite a few months ago at a screening day event, and I absolutely loved it. And I didn't know anything... I didn't know about Frank Sidebottom. I know his image, but I think I just missed when he was kind of on kids' TV and things like that.
Yeah.
But absolutely adored it. I just wondered if you could tell us about your first encounter with Frank Sidebottom, whether it was when you actually met him or when you saw him on TV, maybe.
Like the first time I ever became aware of Frank, I mean, I grew up in Lancashire, and up in Lancashire, where you kind of in the northwest of England, he's not only as you know, but he's like a folk hero. You know, like Frank would be just wandering around the streets,
yeah,
doing everything in a really local way. So to the people he was exposing himself to on a regular basis in the north, he just became this kind of like, he's like our Robin Hood or something like that. So I was totally aware of him, and he'd be on all the local telly, like Granada Reports and BBC Northwest Tonight and everything. He'd just be on all these shows, so you were totally aware of him, but I didn't get him really, and I didn't really probably think of him any, I mean, I was only a kid myself at the time, but I didn't think of him as anything really beyond like a silly kids presenter, and I'm probably just a little bit too old anyway for most of these like Saturday morning TV stuff, because by the time Number 73 was on, which I was aware of, for my era was more kind of Tiswas and Saturday Swap Shop. In the early 80s, so I'd actually started working on a Saturday. I had a Saturday job in a comic shop in Preston in Lancashire, and Frank Sidebottom phoned up one day while I was working in the shop. So I picked up the phone, and it was Frank Sidebottom, and he said, "It's the guy off the telly," and I instantly knew from the voice, you know, who he was talking about. The weird guy in a papier-mâché head. And it turned out that he'd been booked to do a personal appearance at our comic shop by my boss, and he wanted to speak to the boss about all the things you would need to know, practical business decisions you need to know if you're doing a personal appearance. What time do you want me? On what date? How much do I get paid? How long do you want me to stay for? What should I do? Where do we park? You know, all the kind of practicalities. And so I called my boss down to the phone, and I was just fascinated, like, oh God, he's talking to the guy off the telly, you know, it's the most famous person I've ever heard from. And my boss got about a minute or two into the conversation, clearly only about halfway through everything they needed to talk about, and then he just looked really confused and stared at the receiver on the phone and just put it down and walked away. You know, I was brought up in an era where using the phone was so formal, you said the phone number when you picked up the phone. So you certainly said goodbye to people. And he hadn't said goodbye to Frank Sidebottom. It seemed so rude and weird. So I went and found my boss, who was in the stock room on his own, having a moment. And he just looked totally confused and bemused. And I said, "What's happened? You didn't say goodbye to Frank Sidebottom." And he said, "Well, I would have done. But we only got like a minute into the conversation. And then Frank just shouted, 'Oh, I've got to go. My mum's just come in.'" And slammed the phone down on him.
Amazing.
I think from that point onwards, I was just obsessed with this guy and why, who would do that? Who would like self-sabotage their own business arrangements just for a joke for one person that doesn't earn them any money and probably costs them money? Who does that, you know?
Yeah.
Nobody. You know, everybody. anybody else in the entertainment world is presumably a pretty hardworking professional and does things properly. But Frank was not that person.
That's such a great story. And is it that kind of quality, that intrigue, that drew you to making an entire film about him?
Well, where that led me after that was that Frank disappeared in the 90s. He kind of just stopped. He went off my radar, and it turns out he went off everyone's radar because he wasn't really doing the Frank Sidebottom character from kind of like the mid to late 90s onwards. You know, there was like a lost decade. But it was in 2006 that I remember reading that Frank is having this comeback. And by this point, I'd become a filmmaker, like an independent filmmaker. So I said to a mate of mine who I knew was a Frank Sidebottom fan, how do I get in touch with this guy? I want to see if we could collaborate on something. And he said, well, the only way to get in touch with him is his P.O. box in Timperley. And that's what he always used. And Timperley, if anyone doesn't know, it's just like a little village on the outskirts of Manchester. And that's where Frank Sidebottom was from. And most of his songs are, taking a song like Born in the USA and changing it to Born in Timperley. he just went on and on and on about this tiny little village for decades that was like the showbiz centre of the universe as far as he was concerned. And it was even the showbiz centre of the universe because Paul McCartney flew over it in a plane once. So I wrote to him and I said, look, Frank, and I did write to Frank, not Chris, this is my showreel, this is what I do as a filmmaker, do you fancy ever collaborating on anything? And I thought, it would take, if I ever heard anything, it would take him, a while for that to process down into his, how could I use this guy, a free filmmaker or whatever. But he wrote back to me like the next day, and he just said, come on Sunday, bring a fantastic film crew. And I don't really need to be asked twice to do something as foolish as that. So I rounded up a film crew, and we went up to Timperley, and what it turned out he was doing his magical Timperley tour, which was Frank Sidebottom on an open-top bus with like 100 of his fans, and he would drive you around Timperley, showing you where everything is, and then get off the bus, and he would go for a walking tour of the centre of the village with Frank. So it was like 100 people who were like diehard Frank Sidebottom fans walking around with this kind of living cartoon character, and he just wanted to show you all the amazing stuff that Timperley has. Like, it's got two post boxes outside the post office, one for left-handed people, one for right-handed people. He was this guy who could subvert the kind of the details of the mundane and the everyday and turn it into something imaginative and fantastic to take you out of the everyday. That tour concluded with cramming as many people into the chip shop as he could do to try and break the world record for the number of people in a chippy. it was just a bizarre day out. And when it was done, I realised that I'd spent far more time with Frank than I had with Chris. I met Chris for about five minutes that day, and it made no sense to me at all, that 5 minutes. And it just left me with more questions than answers, having spent time with him. So I just wanted to know, really, who was this guy? Who was the guy who plays this character, Frank Sidebottom? He's created this fictitious, real character that people totally believe in and totally buy into, and he's created this whole world for him where Frank has his own friends and characters and puppets, and who's done this, who's made this kind of huge meta universe and then hidden behind this persona. Yeah. And why have they hidden behind it? Because the other thing is that intrigued me is that every creative person I've ever known, they all want in some way some credit for their creativity. They all want a pat on the back or just for an audience to say, I understand the statement you've just tried to make. I get it, and it's good, and to reflect that back so it seems like your creativity is worth doing. But Chris, the creator, was hiding inside the character. I mean, literally, it was like a big ventriloquist dummy that the creator's inside of. So he never got the credit as the creative figure. And he allowed Frank to take all the credit. So I wondered who would do that. That doesn't fit with the way most people approach their creativity.
Yeah, you're right. That is definitely something really unique about him. And you've mentioned there that, he could make anything into something interesting and creative. And he has this insatiable need to make stuff. What was it like to go through the masses of his archive of his work?
Fascinating and revealing and really laborious and time consuming. Mm. I mean, you know, when I after Chris had died, I basically was able to say to his brother a few years after Chris's death, has anybody thought about making a film about your brother? Not even necessarily about Frank Sidebottom, but just about Chris and who Chris was. Kind of, and incorporate like the whole best of Frank Sidebottom into that, but just explore Chris and finally give him the credit that he didn't get in life. And his brother, like Chris had done, his brother contacted me straight away and he said, I've just cleared his house. I've got 100 boxes of his personal possessions and I've got nowhere to put them. So if you can bring a transit van and haul this stuff away and then make something out of it, then you'd be doing us a massive favour. So I did. I went and got a transit van and filled it with this guy's life and brought it back. And what I was expecting to see was all Frank Sidebottom. And when you start unpacking his boxes, you suddenly realise how much work Chris Seavey did over the years as Chris Seavey, mm-hmm. all under different guises. Like he had a band in the 70s called the Freshies. They were like a post-punk, like new wave band, and power pop, I think would you would call the genre. But he pumped like a decade into that work to his own music, and so that was like the biggest revelation, is realizing that inside this guy Frank Sidebottom, you've not only got everything that Frank created, you've got everything that Chris created, and most of that has not been seen by the public, and people don't know that story. So even Frank Sidebottom's biggest fans, who know all about Frank, until they see the film, they know very little about Chris, really. And so that, I think, is the biggest revelation, is that, oh, there's not just, here is the man who was doing Frank Sidebottom, it's here's everything else he was doing in as his own right, and he was doing just an extraordinary amount of work. He never stopped creating, he did it every day.
Yeah, I really loved learning about all the things he'd made, all his music. I genuinely really enjoyed a lot of his music, and that he made a video game, and just to find out about it, this man was really, really interesting. And I think what makes the documentary really unique is that you feel like you're getting to know Chris, not just from like his peers and loved ones, but directly through his work and everything he's made. Was that always kind of part of the plan of how you wanted to tell his story?
There wasn't really a plan. There was just, this is the film I want to make, and what's going to become of it. What, you know, start making it and see what happens. But it was only from the point of opening all these boxes of his possessions and realizing how rigorously he self-documented his life. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was one of the first people in Britain, probably certainly in like, you know, a domestic situation, to have a video camera. He filmed everything. Before that, he filmed everything on Super 8. So he was like meticulously documenting every part of his life. Like, he thought this is important. This, everything he's doing is at some point to some foolish independent filmmaker is going to seem really important, and I need to preserve it all. But I think he just had that sense that what he was doing was worth preserving and recording, and that was a shock as well. So he start popping in his VHS players into a machine and start watching them, and he realised that they must be intimate recordings. And I've got to say as well, being Chris Seavey and Frank Sidebottom, most of the videotapes were either mislabeled or not labeled at all. Same with his audio cassettes and his CDs and his reel-to-reel tapes and everything else. You know, he's done such an amazing job of saving everything, and yet such a terrible job of cataloguing it all.
I guess that's where you come in. I mean,
well, there are like shots in the film that are like archive gold. There would only ever be one copy of it. It's like a home movie moment or something like that. I think of one in particular, but it was discovered, that shot was discovered like 2 hours into a blank tape. So Dave, who discovered that moment, had literally gone through a videotape that was just static, like a brand new tape that's never been recorded on. And 2 hours in, all of a sudden, it's like a little home movie moment. Mm. And it would have been so much easier to just, after the first 5 minutes, go, this is a blank tape, and pop it out and eject it. But we really did try and go, well, this is an incredibly unpredictable mind who has documented himself. He's probably done it in an incredibly unpredictable way. So everything needs to be checked. And it led to a lot of time wasting as well. Like, I personally went through a 3-hour video that was labelled Huckleberry Hound and Friends, because Frank Sidebottom had written Frank Sidebottom over the top. So I assumed, well, somewhere on here is going to be something to do with Frank Sidebottom. It turned out it was just Frank Frankenstein Bottoms video of Huckleberry Hound. So I learned a lot about Huckleberry Hound's social network that day, but I didn't learn anything at all about Chris, other than that he was obviously probably somewhere enjoying the fact that he was wasting my time.
Yeah, he's definitely got a presence in all this, massively. And the film is really affectionate, but it also doesn't shy away from the truth as well. Some of those more sadder moments in his life. What was it like to make a documentary about someone you kind of know but will never also know, and make sure that people who've maybe never heard of him or people that love him also get to be kind of involved by when they're watching the story?
Well, it was very important to me from the start to be working with his family on making it, and to say to them at all times, you know, I did warn them multiple times, so I knew that they understood what I was talking about. The film is called Being Frank for a reason. It's about, this was a secretive man, and now it's time to be honest about what he was like, and not just how amazing he was, but also all these foibles and personality flaws, and you know, he hurt people along the way, and he acts in a selfish way, or you know, he has a drinking problem, and there's all kinds of things going on that are not all fun and light. But that was important to me to have that in. You know, I kind of learned, there was a documentary that I watched before I started making it, and I don't say which documentary it was, but I remember reading a review of it, and I hadn't felt it was fully satisfying myself. And I read a review, and they used the word hagiography, which I looked up, and it turned out, I mean, it's just the good stuff. It's just the positives about this person. And I thought, well, I'm not sure Chris would have wanted that. I think he was somebody who, you know, he was meticulously recording all the downsides in his life as well as the upsides. And I'm more interested in honesty about who was he. Otherwise, you haven't done a proper job. So it was really important to me that it was a film that had his flaws in there, which are, you know, as with anybody, we've all got flaws. Chris's are larger than life at times, because all the good stuff about him is larger than life as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I found that really refreshing when watching the film, because even those elements that, you know, are less favourable, it kind of didn't stop you from loving lots about him as well. It kind of made him more a full-bodied person, definitely. Both yourself and Chris are artists, and you make things. Why do you think it's important to document things?
Because life is short. You know, we get one opportunity, and you either use it as an opportunity and go, you know, because I think, you know, one of the things where I agree with Chris is that life is pretty absurd. We don't know why we're here. We don't have long. You can do a job that you don't enjoy and survive purely to keep working to pay the bills, or you can go, my voice is as good as and important as anyone else's. It's unique. Which is not to say, you know, it's not me saying I'm amazing, but I do feel that I have my own unique perspective on the world that no one else can have. And so to me, to become a filmmaker, it was important to explore that voice through the medium which I responded to, which was cinema. You know, I was a cinema obsessive, and so that was always the medium I was going to work in. And I think Chris, you know, reading his notebooks and stuff from a very early age, he just knew the same thing, that whatever he could come up with would be unique to him, and that's enough. You don't really need more than that. And wherever that, those instincts, which are your own, shaped by your own personal history, take you, is you're going to make something that's not like anyone else's. You know, I think the important thing is to try not to do something like other people are doing, is to just know that you've got your own unique voice and explore it.
Yeah, you can definitely see that Chris took that with him, because like you say, he's not waiting for the kind of reward at the end of his creativity. He's enjoying the process. It's about the making more than anything.
Yeah, I don't think there was anything else that he really wanted. I mean, there were times in his life where he knew that he needed money, but like you talk about the reward, I mean, most people would go to financial reward. And I don't think that was part of his thinking in any way. Mm-hmm. I don't think, you know, there were times, like I've seen his accounts over the years, and if you see him in 1990, he's earning loads of money from TV, radio, comedy, albums, all the rest. But he didn't live any differently then than he did when he had no money at all. And three people were coming to see Frankside Bottom doing a show. Mm. He, you know, people said if he had £100 in his pocket, he'd spend £101. Like, he just didn't really know what money was for. So I don't think he was ever working with this like big goal in mind that he was going to like make it in some way and be, you know, this like huge earner. That wasn't what it was about. It was about exploring what he wanted to do on any given day, in the moment, and just be spontaneous with his creativity and respond to the world as he saw it around him. And whatever happened after that, that's what happened.
Yeah, definitely. And you can see how much kind of, just from you speaking to you now and in the film, that how much Chris and Frank has influenced you as your own artist and filmmaker. But have you got any other things that influence you as a filmmaker?
Oh yeah, lots. I mean, you know, lots of filmmakers. I guess people like, I've always thought that people's personal style is a kind of culmination of the things that they're interested in, the life that they've led, and also the things that they don't know. Like, I don't think of myself as the most technically experienced or gifted filmmaker. I'm probably quite semi-amateur in the same way that Chris Seavey was. But it just so happens that that kind of approach suited this subject matter. I mean, all of this film has been edited in my spare room, you know, over years, which is not how most people would make a film. You know, you hire an editor and you pay them and you get them for, I don't know, whatever you can afford, a week, 2 weeks, 3 months, whatever. But I always knew with a film like this, I couldn't pay anybody to watch all the material. I mean, there was over 400 hours of footage that got boiled down, so you couldn't hire somebody to watch that. You couldn't afford it, so it had to be if you want to do this film, you do it yourself as much as possible. And I've had some amazing support from other people, but there are times where it's been like a solo, you know, round the world yacht endeavor or something like that.
Total labor of love.
Probably gone off. Total labor of love. You know, and there's, you know, I've never stopped loving it or loving him. Even now, people show me photographs or video or whatever that I haven't seen before, tell me a story about him, and I, you know, emotionally have the same reaction, which is, oh, amazing. There's more to this guy than even I thought. You know, there's still more to him to be discovered. You know, that's how epic his life was.
Yeah, that's such a wonderful bonus to get. And you can hear it. You can hear it in your voice how, you know, which you love talking about it and finding out about him, and you can really get that from the film, definitely. Have you got any other new projects coming up after you've finished transporting Frank Sidebottom heads from one room to another?
Oh, but that was actually life-size Frank Sidebottom that I was talking about. I've had, standees have been made for cinemas now. So each cinema's showing it for like a week. He's going to have a life-size Frank Sidebottom.
Oh, wow.
Cardboard. Frank and little Frank, they look absolutely beautiful. And I had a pallet of 15 of them dropped on my driveway before. So just before we spoke, I was hauling those inside on my own. and getting them up the stairs. But now I've got a weekend with 15 life-size Frank Sidebottom. So if you can't have a good weekend with that, then you're not trying.
You're absolutely right. Fantastic. That's great. And I think the film can be enjoyed by so many people. It was just such a joy to watch the film, and it kind of makes you want to go off and create. Actually, it kind of gets rid of your inhibitions
That's what I kind of hope his legacy is that if he can do it, I can do it. You know, he was self-taught in everything he did. He had no money behind him. He had no contacts in the business or anything like that. Anyone who's listening to this, you have as much going for you as he ever did. You have your own unique voice, and the only difference is that you just need to you switch on that will to actually go, you know what, I'm gonna make a painting, I'm going to make an album, I'm gonna start a band, I'm gonna do this or that, I'm gonna tell some jokes, I'm gonna create a character, I'm gonna do whatever. I don't think Chris would ever have really wanted anyone to copy what he was doing. I think he wanted to inspire people to be as original as him in their own way. But I think his message is partly that we all have that inside us in some way, if we choose to explore it.
That is a wonderful message, Steve. I actually get a little bit emotional hearing you say that. I think that's so lovely. And what you're saying, you sound like the perfect person to have unpacked this incredible life and share it with others is my favourite thing that you've done, is that you've shared this with everybody else. So thank you so much and congratulations on the film. And I wish you all the best with everything you do as well.
Oh, thank you.
Right then, what did you think, Jack?
Oh, God, I think it was not Bobbins. That was a really lovely interview. Your impression was a bit Bobbins.
Yeah, it was, and I totally take that.
Oh, I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed that a new generation are coming into contact with Frank Sidebottom, and that Frank and Chris are being kind of put back together again, because I think the image of Frank Sidebottom gets used in a lot of places, and perhaps Chris and his family are not really receiving credit for that.
Yeah, I agree. I think when I saw the film, I thought it was this incredibly balanced portrayal of somebody's reality, about the creativity of the man behind Frank Sidebottom, and the good and the bad that can come with that. And it was just really nice to see. And it kind of just makes you want to get out there and create, and makes you really enthused about all the kind of resources you might be able to get your hands on, just no matter what your circumstances. So I think that's really exciting.
Stick your own head on.
Yeah.
Right, well, everybody go and see Being Frank. It's out on the 29th of March, and you can find more about it at beingfrank.film. But in the meantime, let's roll credits.
Producer,
Jay Platt.
Logo designed by
Lydia Lipinski at Thoughts Make Things.
Hosted by
Jack Chell
and Abby Standish, with thanks to
Zoe Flower, Steve Sullivan, Sally Hodgson, Sheffield Live and Deborah Parker.
The Cinema for All podcast is supported by the BFI awarding funds from the National Lottery.
Thank you!